They come under attack. Ed Warren's office located a small cottage-sized building attached to the main house by a long enclosed passageway. As Ed sat working on preliminary details of the Amityville case that fateful February morning, the latch at the end of the passageway snapped open, followed by the percussive boom of the heavy wooden door. Footsteps then started toward the office. Ed leaned back in his chair, waiting for Lorraine to enter with a much-needed cup of coffee. "In here," Ed Warren called out. Long moments passed, however, and she didn't appear. "Lorraine!" Ed called out again, but there's no reply. What he heard instead, building in the distance, was an eerie, howling wind. It was not the whistling of wind under the eaves, but rather the menacing roar of a distant cyclone. Goose flesh rose on his arms. "Lorraine," he asked forcefully, "are you there?" Still no response. As the ominous, swirling sound built in power and intensity, Ed quickly thought back over the last few minutes. It then occurred to him that he had heard only three footsteps in the passageway, not the continuous tread of a person walking. Something was wrong. Suddenly the desk lamp dimmed to the strength of a candle flame. Then suddenly the temperature in the office plunged to that of a walk-in freezer. A rank, pungent smell of sulfur rose in the room. Suspicious of the unnatural clamor, Ed Warren opened a desk drawer and withdrew a vial of holy water and a large wooden crucifix. He then got up and walked a few steps out of his office into the anteroom. As he did, there swirled out of the passageway a horrendous, conical whirlwind. Pointed at the bottom, broad at the top, the thing was blacker than the natural blackness of night, far larger than a man, and the swirling black mass moved into the dimly lit room and drifted slowly to Ed's left side and came to a halt some 10 feet away. Now, I know I read this to most of you, but now that we have followed the Warrens to the Donovan house, to the place in Connecticut where little David was possessed, in the book The Devil in Connecticut, and to the house where the two nurses were with the raggedy doll. You know, there's a certain kind of tendency to want to giggle and say, are we supposed to take this serious? But after you encounter so many, it sort of comes through with a little different meaning. As Ed watched, the swirling black mass appeared to grow even denser and blacker than it was before. Indeed, within the swirl, take a picture of my pipe. You got my cameraman listening to me instead of taking pictures to scare you. As Ed watched, it appeared to grow even denser and blacker than it was before. Indeed, within the swirl, he could see that something was beginning to take shape. An entity was beginning to manifest in physical form. As a demonologist, Ed Warren knew he had to act quickly, to take the initiative before this fearsome black mass transformed itself into something even more forbidding and dangerous. Holding the cross toward what was now rapidly changing into a macabre headed specter, Ed stepped forward. The moment he did, however, the entity moved defiantly toward him. Ed stopped and stood his ground as the form slowly drifted forward. When the swirling black mass was no more than a few feet away, Ed methodically and with absolute determination showered the thing in the sign of the cross with the contents of the holy water vial. Then he spoke the ancient command. In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you leave for eternal seconds. The black mass stayed motionless, no more than a foot away from the cross. Then slowly it began to back off, though not before giving Ed a clear vision of himself and Lorraine involved in a potentially deadly automobile accident along the highway. Then the entity withdrew into the passageway from which it came. An enormous sense of relief came over Ed Warren. Who are we leaving? My Lord, are we leaving somebody? Who would leave at this hour? I'm just getting started. I ain't going to stop. Why? I'm not even going to slow down. I mean, I can't stop here. I got the kids to get back to. What is that? I'm in a hurry. Why, Memphis? If you turn over to Channel 30, you'll be able to pick me up. No, you won't. They're going off too. We're just going to have to stay on Channel 30 a little longer. That's all there is to it. An enormous sense of relief came over Ed Warren as he stood sweating profusely in the freezing cold room. Did you hear a strange sound?
Yes, sir.
Did you hear it out there?
Yes, sir.
No, not you. I mean them. Did my chief engineer and director come under demonic attack in there? An enormous sense of relief came over Ed Warren as he stood sweating profusely in the freezing cold room. Yet, as he attempted to collect his thoughts, the vicious snarl of fighting animals suddenly erupted outside the house. Immediately, Ed realized there were no animals fighting. The visitation was still in progress. The entity had simply moved upstairs to attack Lorraine. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door of the office and ran up the back steps of the house. He would be too late. Now, I know you folks in Dallas and Steubenville and other places like me finished that, but I've already read it to people. I mean, you should have been here a couple weeks ago. That one took me at least 3 days. All I'm reading it for is to give you a little sense of what these Warrens have been involved in. They were called in on the Donovan case. And now they got pictures. Pictures of bed sheets being thrown around, levitation in progress, refrigerator moved with a chair on top of it, bottle of Coca-Cola being levitated in the basement, doors being disengaged and moved, and appearing downstairs. I'm not going to tell you the way they said it happened, but you wouldn't believe it. Lamps being levitated. You say that's all stage pictures. Well, there's sure a lot of people are cooperating in the big lie. Now, what happens is as you read these stories and you see the interconnections of the Warrens, they're called in on the Amityville horror case. They're called in on the devil in Connecticut, the murder case of Arne Johnson. Now they're called in by these Hillman people. And it occurs to me, I never did finish Annabelle, did I? We just had that carpenter get scared and say, give me some of that holy water. I keep thinking I finished these things. Now I've lost the place of the one I was reading. I can't believe this. I've lost the place. Oh, there it is. Now they've been called into the Hillman home and the events that occurred there. Three kids, Dee and Bob and Melanie, that have been seeing all kinds of things go on in their house, hearing furniture thrown around, feeling a force field that presses down on them when they try to go up the stairs. Finally, they run out of the radio being turned on, the knob and the dial moving. They race out of the house, and the presence follows them. Finally, the Warrens are called in. They've been getting a report from the kids, and they finally tell the Hillmans to leave, and they're going to try to deal with the spirit presence in the house, which has already been recognized by Lorraine Warren, who's a clairvoyant. The existence of the presence. And in the process of moving up to the final room where, I guess I could say, they corner this spirit, Ed is sharing some of his experiences. He says, I'm not a psychic. I have to provoke the spirit presence. Knowing what I'm up against, many times I'd feel more comfortable, he says, when I'm doing this, carrying a tire iron and a shotgun. But you can't kill something that's existed since the beginning of time. Nevertheless, when I'm there alone, this is Ed giving a little bit of exhortation in the process of getting us ready for the final assault on the spirit presence in this Hillman house. When I'm there alone, the house is still and quiet. Nothing seems wrong. If there's a place where the disturbance is localized, then I'll go to that area first. If the family told me there's no specific locale, then I'll just go from room to room until something happens. If a ghost is responsible for the problem, then it'll usually show itself to me as I'm going through the house. But if it's a demonic spirit sworn to hate God and repulsed by the religious objects, then sooner or later things will let go. The temperature in the house will drop until it's freezing cold or rise to oven hot levels. Up will rise the stink of some foul odor. I may hear something explode. A threatening voice sounding like no human being you've ever heard will order me to leave. I may hear footsteps, telepathically projected, running upstairs. This is a ploy to get me to follow so I could possibly be cornered in some room. Unseen hands may scrawl an obscenity on the walls in front of me. Other times, none of this will happen. And then when I least expect it, the spirit will betray itself and begin to manifest in black. And why does this religious provocation process work? Is it me? No, Ed says. It works because the demonic spirit hates, and I mean hates, any mention of the name of God or the use of religious objects. This entity is so full of guilt, hate, and jealousy that religious provocation is actually painful to the human or inhuman spirit. In the Hillman house, the Warrens worked together. That's what we read now last night. They proceeded from the lower rooms upstairs. When they started to go to the upstairs, climbing the staircase to the second floor, neither Ed nor Lorraine could get any more than halfway up. Pushing against them was an impenetrable, unyielding force. Says Lorraine, it felt like we were walking shoulder deep against a powerful, fast-moving river. As much as they resisted, the power being exerted against them was impossible to overcome. Slowly the Warrens backed down the stairs so as not to be knocked over backwards. At the bottom of the stairs, for a brief second, diabolical laughter rang out. Annoyed, Ed threw more holy water on the stairs, which caused the pressure to diminish enough to let them reach the top. The second floor was partitioned into bedrooms. A long hallway ran the width of the house. Ed sprinkled Melanie's room with holy water, then recited the expulsion command without incident. That room bound, the Warrens moved to Bob's room next. The lightweight door, which had stood open before, was now closed. Ed turned the knob and pushed the door open with his fingertips. To their relief, the room was vacant. Again, Ed went through the binding procedure without trouble. Dee's room was the last stop. The door to the older girl's room was also closed. What awaited them on the other side, the Warrens did not know. Ed twisted the doorknob, cracked, correct the door ajar, and then swung it wide open. They both stepped back involuntarily. There was something in the room. Though invisible, it projected a horrible sense of misery. It was an absolutely heartbreaking emotion projected by an entity that is damned to perish. Yet the Warrens knew better than to react to this emotional ploy. It was but a ruse, an appeal for sympathy. Instead, with a steely composure, Ed walked into the room, cross in hand. Though no physical presence was there to be seen, the bedroom was freezing cold. One last time, Ed threw holy water in all four corners of the room. Then, that's where we were. We finally got back to it. I think I've worn you out. I don't think you want me to finish. Do you?
Yes, sir.
Then, commanding, he stated, "In the name of God, show yourself now or leave." The dead silence lingered. "Give us some sign of departure," Ed said aloud in the empty room, "or exorcism will be conducted here this very day." Almost instantly, now, what happened almost instantly? Oh, please don't let me finish. I think I've taken so long I've made you mad now you don't want me to finish. I really believe you don't want me to finish. There was no physical presence there to be seen. The bedroom was freezing cold. One last time, Ed threw holy water in all four corners of the room. Then, commanding, he stated, "In the name of God, show yourself now or leave." A dead silence lingered. "Give us some sign of departure," Ed said aloud in the empty room, "or exorcism will be conducted here this very day." Almost instantly, the morbid sense of misery began to drain away from them. Then the temperature in the room gradually returned to normal. The spell was broken. looking around the bedroom, the Warren saw why the spirit had taken up this room as its abode. D's bedroom contained black conjuring candles, occult vestments, and books containing the rites for profane rituals of all sorts. Ed placed the items in the girl's trash basket, set them out in the hallway, and then sealed the room by reading a prescribed prayer of sanctification. This job done, the Warrens walked back downstairs. They noticed the Hillman family sitting in their car in the driveway. Lorraine opened the door and waved them inside. "Everything depends on your future actions." "Actions," Ed explained once they came in. He tells them things to be careful of and to do, and then said, "The rest is up to you." At the front door, Ed made a final comment. "By the way, the spirit in this home is dormant," he warned, "but it hasn't vanished." With that, Lorraine's eyeglasses suddenly rose from her hand. In full view of everyone, looped once in the air, and then, "That's all there is to this story. This one was left unfinished. Can't blame me. I finished the story, but there's another chapter of unworldly origin. Now, don't say I can't finish something. It may start something else, but I finished it. Give me a hand.